Welcome back, listeners. Another episode of the Cyber Queens podcast. And Stacey and I are sitting here with Lynn Dom, the executive director of Women in Cybersecurity, the WISIS organization that we all know. Lynn, welcome to the Cyber Queens. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
I think I kind of stole your thunder a bit. I gave them your title and where you work and everything, but please go ahead and introduce yourself and tell the people a little bit about you.
All right. So I'm Lynn Dom. I'm with the Women in Cybersecurity Organization. We often go by our acronym, WISIS, and we spell that W-I-C-Y-S, pronouncing it WISIS like we sisters, because we're a global cyber sisterhood. So our mission is to recruit, retain, and advance women in cybersecurity. And you know, I heard the WISIS like we sisters at my very first conference itself in 2018 when it was here in Chicago. And I was like, that makes sense. So it makes it so much easier to remember. So I've been executive director since October of 2019. And WISIS has really, you know, changed my life. My first conference was in 2018. It was the first time I had this camaraderie and community and network within my own cybersecurity journey. And so it's really great pleasure to be executive director and to be able to be a part of these amazing conversations on Cyber Queens, which is a great name for a podcast. And congratulations to you both for Difference Makers of the Year Award. That's super awesome. And all your hard work that you're doing within the community. So thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a big milestone for Cyber Queens. This conversation came about because of our fabulous volunteer, Jody Lash, who was like, hey, are we interested in like partnering with WISIS and doing a little cross collaboration, a little cross promotion? I was like, 1,000%, absolutely. Please make that happen. Can you make that happen? And we all sat down on a planning call and this came about. And gosh, just hearing Lynn talk on that first call about the mission and how they execute on it and the values. I was just like, I was starstruck. I was like, I'm so in love right now with everything you're saying. This is perfect. So one of the first things we love to have guests do is tell everybody their origin story. So I know you work in more of a nonprofit position within kind of the cyber industry, but did you have a cyber position or how did you get started with WISIS? I have to reprogram my brain because I was a WISIS. We discussed this. She's like, is it WISIS? WISIS?
WISIS? I know. We answered everything.
Started.
So you're all good. You're all good. We answered everything. Yeah, so about 16 years ago was my first introduction to cybersecurity in general. I got contracted on a grant, a cybersecurity grant here in the Chicagoland area. And I was instantly just amazed at this workforce and the work that we were doing. And so it was so mission focused and, you know, ever evolving, fast paced. Everyone that was involved in the cybersecurity workforce initiatives that were working on this grant, they were super tuned in and tapped into, just hyper focused on just, you know, the good work that they were doing. And so that was about 16 years ago. And as a contractor, I had other contracts as well. And so I started just realigning myself with what cybersecurity workforce initiatives. It was just this niche area where I just wanted to stay. It resonated with me. It was fast paced and, you know, being a person that likes to change courses very often and just is very multitasking myself, it was just a very exciting area for me to focus on. So I bounced around throughout my career and I was having contracts with nonprofits, for profits, and grants on the East Coast, on the West Coast. I started bringing up conferences into the area, but the first time I was introduced to the WISIS organization was around 2015, 2016. When I did some support work for them. And then I was not able to even make it to any of those conferences. So I was just working behind the scenes and really enjoying what I was doing, working virtually, not meeting anyone in person, kind of similar to the story of you two. And then in 2018, finally, it worked out in my schedule that I was able to go to the Chicago conference. And it was the first time that I had that aha moment in my career where I was able to sit down and meet a community and really be surrounded by a tight network. And my career advanced very quickly from that 2018 conference here in March. And because of that, in 2019, I received a little message around August 2019 from our founder, Dr. Amberine Siraj, and she was at Tennessee Tech University at the time. And she asked me if I consider applying for the position of executive director for Women in Cybersecurity. And I thought, when else in my career am I going to be able to merge my passion and my career into one and, you know, really sit in a place that resonates and is right for me. And so I went ahead and went for it and did about 3 months of hardcore interviews with board of directors, and then landed in that position October of 2019. So it's been a dream. It hasn't been easy. We have done a lot of incredible work. And, you know, as soon as I joined as executive director, we went right into a pandemic, and then we exploded into more of an international organization. And we've been ebbing and flowing and navigating through it all and taking each moment as it comes. So it's been great.
So you didn't have any challenges when you joined. Not only is women in cyber a challenge, then we had women in cyber during a pandemic, which is phenomenal.
Yes. We canceled the 2020 conference on March 5th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, it's etched in my brain forever because the conference was supposed to be March 12th. So it was 1 week away. And I was like, the pandemic, that is not going to impact us in Colorado. We're all safe. That's going to stay right there in California, right there. And then all of a sudden, you know, from 9 o'clock in the morning of making the decision on March 5th that we're keeping it to 3 o'clock in the afternoon being like, the conference is off. We cannot do it. It's no longer sustainable. So, but, you know, we were able to flex very easily, and we went into a virtual conference, and it was incredible. And that's where we really started gathering the momentum in our international community. And they started collaborating with many regional affiliates in the States, and just a lot of beauty came from that effort.
Yeah, I so appreciate that conferences went virtual, because 2020 was my first year as a practitioner. It was my first year as a pen tester, and I did not know what I was doing. And all the conferences I wanted to go to learn got canceled. And I was like, no. And then they all went virtual. And as a single mom with an infant and a toddler, I was like, this is better. This is great. I can learn from all these people in my living room folding laundry. Perfect. So I personally love how all you conferences and WeCs pivoted to virtual. It meant a lot to me in my journey.
So that's curious, Lynn, you know, we see so much about it on our LinkedIn feeds every day. Like, it seems like every day there's someone celebrating, whether they, you know, got a speaker slot at the conference, or they are part of a new training program, or they have signed up to do mentoring. There are so many things being offered. And even more so, you're talking about this international expansion. So I don't know if there's any way you can kind of sum up for us, like what the different focus areas are, and especially to how that international community can take advantage of opportunities.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on with the WeCis organization. And I know it's kind of hard to figure out, like, where do I fit in here? Because there's so many pieces of it. And everything, like with the WeCis membership, every launch that we have and every opportunity, every scholarship, any training program, any specific initiative, that's all included with the membership. There's never any additional fees or anything like that. And so it's always like, where is WeCis going and what are we doing and all the different areas? But our mission is to recruit, retain, and advance women in cybersecurity. So what we do is we provide accessibility and opportunities to cybersecurity, not only for gaining momentum and creating the community and bringing the pipeline in, but also to really sit with the individuals that are within the workforce and identify what their needs are to not only be retained and stay in the workforce, but advance in their careers because of it. And so I think maybe it would be helpful if I just kind of go over like a quick little timeline of WeCis and how we got started. All right. So we started in 2014 as a conference, and we were a conference only. So we had very humble beginnings. We started as a $70,000 NSF grant. Our founder, Dr. Amberine Siraj at Tennessee Tech University, she was like, at that time, the statistic came out that 11% of women were in the workforce. And she was like, I'm really not seeing it in any of my circles of industry, academia, or government. And so her thought was, if women in cyber exist, let's go out and let's bring them together for a technical conference so we could all learn, grow, and advance together. And so NSF awarded her the money and she hosted the first conference. So we started as a conference. And because the needle was moving very slowly, even though the conference was growing quickly, the needle was moving slowly for women in the workforce. In 2018, another study came out that said, hey, women are still represented at only 11% of the workforce. And it was that time that we decided to become a nonprofit. And so now we're a member-based organization. We have over 9,000 members, representation in 95 countries. We have 68 professional affiliates all throughout the continent of Africa and countries like Australia, Canada, France, India, Pakistan, Ireland, UK, Germany, and all throughout the United States. We have specialty affiliates, and they're extensions of us as a global organization, and they're in AI, critical infrastructure, cloud security, data privacy, and cybersecurity law. We have LGBTQ plus pride, neurodiversity, Latinas in cyber, colors of inclusion, deaf community. Our deaf affiliate launched last year. We're super proud of that. So we have a lot of different areas and community efforts for women to gather, connect, and learn and grow in that collective space. And then on top of that, we have 260 student chapters. So that's just our community. We have all sorts of different initiatives, and I think we're going to be touching base on some of those initiatives later. So the conference is where we started. It's still a really important part of our organization, but it's one of many, many different initiatives now.
And that was in what year you said the inaugural conference?
2014.
2014. Okay, so here we are 10 years later. It's 10-year anniversary this year. I'm just curious, if you have these off the top of your head, if not, it's cool. Do you know how many attendees you had coming to the conference at first and how many about you've grown to expect on an annual basis about today?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we had 350 in 2014, 550 in 2015. Yes. Wow. And then it grew to 900, 1,000. And then we had a little bit of a pandemic in there. So we went to virtual. Right. And then we went back in person with masks on and then vaccine mandatory. And so this year, our capacity is going to be at 2,200 attendees. Wow. So last year, when we opened up registration for the 2023 conference, we reached full capacity in less than a half hour.
Yeah.
So this year we're also going to be hosting a virtual conference in collaboration with the in-person event in order to have that growth strategy in place, because we booked our venue 5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So it's been a very long time since we booked that venue, because we knew it was our 10-year anniversary. We're a Tennessee-based nonprofit. We're founded at Tennessee Tech University. Then we rolled off into our own nonprofit. So our first conference was in Nashville. We want to head back on to Nashville for our 10-year anniversary. And so we only have so much space for this year. And then the virtual piece is also going to allow for us to continue that room and growth and expansion there.
I'm so excited. That's phenomenal growth. We hope to experience similar growth. We'll see as an enterprise. Just want to... Yeah, hopefully. Want to warn you all out there, Stacy and I will be competing with you on Monday, February 19th, right at, 9 a.m. Pacific?
I think it's 9 o'clock. I'd have to double check the
calendar myself. I'll have to check my calendar invite. I have it on my calendar. I'm not doing anything that hour, but trying to get tickets to this event, because it is the new ShmooCon, okay? It sells out. It is a habitually sold out event. So if you hope to be there and you hope to see us there, we'll be there. Make sure you're logged in that morning and you're getting a ticket early. So
That's FYSA. Awesome.
I also want to repeat the number that was stated, 20, I believe it was 2,200. So anyone who is like, where are all the women in cybersecurity? I mean, the fact that you can gather 2,200 of them and it sells out in, you know, literally minutes, like they clearly exist. We are clearly out there. It's not that difficult to figure out where we are.
I was saying, I didn't know there were 2,200 of us. I'm like, there's that many? I'm so excited. I've never gotten to go to a WSIS conference. I just learned about it. Like, I've only been in cyber for 4 years. My first year, it was canceled. The second year, I learned about it. Last year, I couldn't go. So this year, I'm going and I'm excited. But I was like, that's how Cyber Queens got started too. We were just asking each other in a LinkedIn post, where are the women? Like, where are we? Can we all be friends? Like, are all five of us friends already? And that's how Cyber Queens was birthed too. So it's a very similar story.
Yeah, so I want to kind of touch on this is kind of cool, because we're sort of leaning into this topic that's on my mind around inclusion, right? And WSIS has an incredible study that you all work on. I think there's been at least, you know, one or two, and I know you're working on additional ones, just around the state of inclusion the statistics you all uncover, and the stories that are talked about in those reports of situations that are happening today in, you know, 2024 for women in cybersecurity, this, you know, overall, sometimes it can feel like in organizations, if you talk to someone about it, they're like, oh, we're beyond that. Like, we're not down at that level. Like, these things aren't happening anymore. Like, but then you read a study like that and it just is eye opening. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more, if you could share a little bit more about that study, that process, what inspired it, and what you're hoping to do with it, you know, change you might be able to influence.
Right. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because the stories are so powerful. If we all have our own stories and they continue to happen, and they're so systemic and they're so part of our day-to-day lives, and they continue to happen that people don't believe it. Like, they're like, oh yeah, that's in the past. But it's not. Like, some of the stories from one of our senior leaders within the organization, a senior professional, she shared recently, as the only female panelist, that every time she spoke, the moderator kept on looking at his watch. But every time everyone else was speaking, he was like engaged and really just, you know, listening wholeheartedly. But every time, I mean, these experiences happen over and over again. Another story that one of my OASIS member, that when I was at Black Hat, we went out to breakfast together, and she shared that when she was first started in her career, just about 3 years ago, that her senior manager put her headshot on a leadership slide deck and labeled it diversity hire, like labeled it diversity hire. And she saw that slide deck. The stories go on and on. And in that report, we have many, many, you know, stories to share, as I'm sure you all do within your community. Without, you know, just talking amongst ourselves, we all have those stories. But that's what led us to look at what is the state inclusion. We know that diversity, we know that ISE2 and other organizations, they do a great job in studying what is the diversity in cybersecurity workforce. But we wanted to really look at, if we're seeking out retention and advancement, what is that state of inclusion? And diversity sometimes turns into a feel-good metric. So we all know that. We all know that it's a data point and it's a metric you can measure. So sometimes, in some instances, organizations or companies, they could measure that metric. And when they have that number, they could put in some initiatives and they see that number grow. Then they're like, oh, congratulations, pat ourselves on the back. We're really making strides in the workforce. But inclusion is a lot more complicated, because inclusion is a feeling. And it's only felt when you're excluded, which makes it hard. And so it was really hard for us as an organization to bring awareness to leaders on the state of inclusion, when we also know that the higher that leaders rise, there are less experiences of exclusion actually occur. So why would we think that they would have an understanding on the state of inclusion when their experiences of exclusion have lessened and lessened throughout the years? And so we really wanted to quantify the experiences of exclusion to identify the state of inclusion for women in cybersecurity, and so that we could get data and we could open up the conversation. So we pioneered that study. We partnered with Elyria. It was fabulous. It was a great experience. We opened up the study again at the end of last year. Our new findings have not come out yet, but we're super excited when they do. I'll just have to follow up with you all with an extra report. But it was an opportunity for us to just really look at the data. And, you know, some of it, there was no surprises. Like 68% of women identified that their experiences of exclusion came from their leaders in the organization. 61% is from their managers. 57% is from peers. And like, I think it's 12% from policy. So it goes with the old adage that people leave their managers, not their careers. So we knew that. We weren't expecting anything other than that. But when it came to looking at the experiences of exclusion, primarily for women in cybersecurity, that a researcher, Elyria, has not seen with any other industry, is that 57% identify as the lack of career growth and opportunities as their area of exclusion within the cybersecurity. So interestingly enough, that aligns with what another finding of the report is, that women experience a glass ceiling in cybersecurity around 6 years within the workforce, which is alarming. And anyone that's listening should really take a good look. If you have incredible women on your team and they're around that 5-6 year mark, right, look at their career growth advancement opportunity and put that in place. because you don't want to lose them.
That's me. I hit my 5 years this year. Six is next year. No, I quit. I don't want it. I don't want it. No, I think it's so interesting that you said they haven't seen that in any other industry, just ours.
And not any other industry. No. Come respect on, is normally one, number one. You know, respect was there in our studies. Respect was number one. So they see that, but they've never seen that high instance, 57% of lack of career growth and opportunities for women in cybersecurity in the industry. That's what they're identifying as their sources of exclusion.
Wow.
So, It's an eye-opening study. That's why we were super interested in opening it up for more individuals to participate and take a look at the findings again.
And I think it's so tactful the way that you guys chose to show the absence of the thing we hope to see by emphasizing the state of how things currently are. You're like, if we're experiencing all this exclusion, it means your inclusion is lacking. And to all those out there, we said this last week, who think, oh, women are doing fine, diversity is moving forward, why do you still need women podcasts and women conferences? This is why. It is still a thing. Okay. This is why. The study is fabulous. If you haven't downloaded previous years, I recommend you check it out. And apparently this year's is coming out. So definitely check it out for sure.
Yeah, I definitely just want to echo the point that you made too about how as people move up the ladder, the relatability of what's going on for the people in some of the more entry-level roles, there starts to be distance. And I think we see that a lot outside of cybersecurity. When you just look at like the number of CEOs with a stay-at-home spouse, right? When you look at male CEOs, like almost all of them have a stay-at-home spouse that can, you know, provide all of that support for that individual while they stay solely focused on their career. Whereas on the flip side, first off, there's not that many women CEOs to begin with. And then if there are women CEOs, you know, the statistic is a little bit different. Like, only a fraction of them have stay-at-home spouses. And so they're still trying to, you know, succeed and do it all without the help of literally having someone else with that full-time dedication supporting them, right? And so it's the same thing in like cybersecurity. I think if we brought it back to our industry, you know, as you move up in cybersecurity, the roles can get to be more demanding. And, you know, if you have other responsibilities outside of the household and have another working spouse, you know, it kind of sets us all up to be in a no-win situation, right? And so the solution isn't like, you know, oh, like we should like get people more, you know, stay-at-home spouses or only hire the people who can have stay-at-home spouses or whatever, right? Like we need to change the system so that everyone can be involved and everybody in a household can take on their equal share of labor and scope our jobs to be better cognizant of that, because we aren't a, you know, single provider household anymore like it was back when. It's literally just not possible.
Right, exactly. And like with WESIS, we exist because we're at a critical workforce shortage. And the gap has even gotten bigger. I mean, and it was in 2022, there was 3.4 million unfilled jobs. In 2023, at the end of the year, there was 3.9 million unfilled jobs. I mean, that's another statistic that we have to ourselves and other nonprofits and other organizations and other voices for the communities in cybersecurity that we all serve. We have to make sure that we're creating accessibility to cybersecurity careers and opportunities. And so the industry itself does not have time to lose. It needs to retain its talent and it needs to advance. And women are part of that equation in order to advance. Because one of the barriers too is inadequate role models. And we all know that. And it's hard to be what you cannot see. And so we need women in those high level positions to just continue to create and be the trailblazers in that pathway.
Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, when I think of like who's above me and who I can look to be a role model, it's pretty difficult to imagine myself in some of these, you know, other people's shoes and their situations because of, you know, the trade-offs that they decided to make. Now, whether or not I know that they were chosen or they were kind of forced to do it for the sake of advancing their career, I don't know that, but we shouldn't be in a situation where like it's going to have to come to that decision, right? It's going to have to come to a decision of having children or not having children, or having a spouse stay at home, or, you know, forego a job because you both want to be able to continue progressing your career, or taking a lesser, you know, a lesser paying or a lower level position, and having to, you know, stop your career advancement because the expectations that we put on CISOs these days are just, you know, way too outsized, yeah. Right?
Right.
Yeah. I think there are a number of CISOs who would agree with you. We're going to close out on that note. Thank you, everybody, for your listening and for your wonderful comments and for the debates that we've sparked and the questions that you've asked. We will be addressing all those in the comments later. Lynn, thank you so much for being here with us today. I personally learned so much about WeCs I didn't even know before. Like, I'm constantly just learning more and more. I just pop that into the comments. So I can't wait to get involved. I'm going to join the mentorship program when it opens up. I hope you're in my cohort. So I don't think the best way with this guest is to, if you want to reach out or connect with her, is to DM, because Lynn is a very busy lady, but you can get involved, become a member of WeCs, attend some of the smaller events or virtual events. You can connect with people like Stacey and I at events. We'll be there this year. So, or you can become a member, become a volunteer, and get involved. So with that, thank you for being here. We the Cyber Queens wish you success on your endeavors, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.